This episode brought to you by Own the Gray podcast. Discover how others age with attitude at ownthegray.ca.
In her new book, The Extraordinary Unordinary You, Simone Kanigo tells her story and takes you inside her unique journey and the extraordinary moments which have shaped her life and defined her mission. Sharing the lessons she's learned from life's ups, downs, and laugh-out-loud moments, you'll be inspired to discover your own journey and head out to be the good in the world. This is Dr. Susan Hoffman, and today on Lunch with a Healer, I had a wonderful conversation with Simone Kanigo about her book and her life. Simone talks about having belief in ourselves, living life to the fullest, showing kindness to others and ourselves, and sharing that kindness in the little things we do to help make this world a better place. So please sit back and enjoy. Share this episode with your friends, and let's meet Simone.
The best conversations happen when we're having lunch with our friends, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair and join us to expand your knowledge and open your mind.
Welcome to Lunch with a Healer, Simone.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here with you today.
And I'm excited to have this discussion. So why don't we start with you sharing a bit about yourself?
So I guess first, I am a mom of six. I just turned 50 last week, so that was exciting.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I've been married to my husband. This Sunday will be 29 years. I am an author. I'm a public speaker, but I've done many things in my life. I started off as a CPA. I have a master's in accounting, and I'm a big believer that it's okay to change your mind. You got to figure out what you're passionate about. And a lot of times when we're 18 years old and having to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, it's kind of hard to make that decision at that age. So that's a little bit about me.
That's a lot for one person, I must say. And we're going to go through that a bit. And congratulations on the book, Extraordinary Ordinary You. It's a wonderful title.
Thank you.
And I've used that terminology myself because I do believe everyone is extraordinary in their own right. So what inspired you to write a book and this particular book?
It started from volunteer work that I was doing. I was doing a lot of volunteer work with the Jewish Federations of North America, and I was going to different communities sharing my story. We have lots of stories. Obviously, with six kids, the stories are endless, but that was the kind of the beginning of first falling in love with public speaking, but also realizing that the impact a story can have on someone. And I didn't believe in myself for years. And that kind of moment where it was the realization of that every little thing we do makes a difference in the world. By sharing my story, I was motivated then by people in the audience that kept saying to me, have you written a book? You should write a book. And my first response was, well, I'm not a writer. There I was again, limiting myself. And I said, why not? Like, let's do this. I do want to share my stories. And I think it's really important. And that book specifically, it's really about, you know, realizing what you're capable of and recognizing that the little things you do every day matter. So I think a lot of times we go through our lives and say, well, I'm not making a difference. I'm home raising my kids. That makes a huge difference in the world. You know, raising good humans is really one of the most important things we can do. So really being able to share my stories and from my perspective and saying that, hey, I didn't believe in myself. I struggled with all these things. I've finally realized that we all matter. We are all more than enough, and we all make a difference in the world.
Wonderfully said. How long did it take you to write this book?
It took me a year. It was a full-time job, and a lot of it actually was during the beginning of COVID when we were shut down and everybody came home. So we had three kids that were out of the house and they were all now home. So, which was honestly the blessing for us was that we got to have that moment because my oldest son is 25 and he didn't have that same connection with the younger kids. He's been out of the house for 7 years now. And so that part was really a positive thing for us. Some of my best moments of writing was in the midst of the chaos of all of them being home because it reminded me of the chaos I wanted to write about.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm curious. I interviewed another author. She wrote a fictional book
but it's still a process writing a book. Mm-hmm. And it's no easy feat. Were there many rewrites? Was the editing? How did you get it published?
Yeah, there are many rewrites, and you know, every story I'm like, wait, did that come across the way I wanted it to come across? You know, what I'm thinking in my head is not always how it's showing up on paper. So I think that was, you know, when you're having a conversation, you can clarify things much easier, right? If I say a word that, wait, you know what, I didn't mean it like that, I can come back and restate it. But once it's on paper, it's on paper. You know, I did self-publish. We were in the beginning of the lockdowns, and I was like, there's no way for me to go out and share a manuscript and see what's going to happen. If I do another one, I think I'll investigate that avenue.
So is this book directed towards female empowerment?
Yes, for sure. I mean, okay. I would say yes. I mean, definitely, it's funny. I've had a lot of men read it, and they really connect with it as well, which makes me very happy. A lot of them are like, well, I didn't think about that from my wife's perspective or my children. Yeah. Or so I think that it is really directed towards women, but definitely I've had a really nice response from men as well.
Now let's get into what's in the book. You talk about adopting three children, a multicultural family. I mean, it's hard enough to have three biological children. It truly is.
Yes.
What was the incentive behind the adoptions?
The backstory, the beginning of it, is that there's actually 4 years between our first two children. And so we were trying to get pregnant, wasn't happening. We started talking about adoption then. I went to see an infertility specialist. And of course, he does a pregnancy test at his clinic. And he's like, well, tell your friends that I'm the best specialist in the world because you're pregnant just by walking in the door.
Wow.
And so obviously when I found out I was pregnant, then everything got put on hold. And then we had our third, Olivia, and the conversation happened again. We're like, what do you think? Now or never? And we're big into the now. And we're like, there are so many amazing kids in this world just waiting for a family to love them. And we wanted to be that family. And so we adopted our son, Noah, from South Korea. He was a baby. He was 4 months old. And he really turned our world upside down. He was a crier. He cried all of the time, 16 out of the 20 hours on our flight from Seoul to Chicago. And it really made me question myself. I'm like, first, okay, what have I, this poor child, like he, right. You know, he has no idea what's happening to him. But also, wait, I've done this three times. Am I not good at this? Hello, what's right. wrong with me? You know, all these things that start running through your head. And you know, it's the realization of you parent each child differently, right? And it took, you know, so many tries to figure out stuff with him. He is highly functioning on the autism spectrum. So he has a lot of sensory issues. And I mean, he's 15 now and it's a completely different ballgame. But, you know, it's taught me a level of patience that I truly never knew I was capable of. And, you know, really one of the best things we've ever done. And then, crazy enough, we were like, oh, okay, we're still capable of more. Let's do this again. So at the time when we adopted Noah, the oldest parent couldn't be older than 43, I believe. It was 42 or 43. And my husband is 10 years older than me. So he was exactly that age when we adopted Noah. So we couldn't go back to South Korea. Okay. And so we looked at other countries that would fit our family. And we decided to adopt from Ethiopia. Since we had already had four babies now, that we wanted to adopt an older child. And so we asked for a child between, you know, 4 and 10, and they matched us with Ari, and he was 4.5 years old at the time.
And how many years between Noah and Ari?
It was 2 years. Noah was home for 2 years when we adopted Ari.
Okay. That must have been extraordinary. I did read in your book about when you picked Ari up from mm-hmm. his biological family. Will you just talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way adoption works, at least, or it did work in Ethiopia, was the children would be relinquished. They would go to the Ari. So for us, Ari went right from when he was relinquished to our agency's orphanage. And so he was there when we met him. But it was very important to our agency because there is a lot of corruption in adoption. And they want to make sure that we meet whoever is remaining from the birth family so that we understand and so that it isn't that they've bribed someone to give up their children, promising them a better life somewhere right. else. It's not that. It's truly that these children were relinquished. And so we went to visit Ari's birth family. Ari did not come with us for reasons that are very understandable. It would be very hard for him to understand what was happening. I think that was probably one of the hardest things is seeing his birth mother had passed away the year before he was relinquished. And he was truly starving. They lived in a mud hut, no running water, you know, dirt floors. When you think about a country that is a developing country and you're thinking about what the homes are like and, you know, he had to travel to get water. A lot of things that I have taken for granted in my life, it was very eye-opening for me and for all of us. And so we had our two oldest girls with us, you know, really seeing them experience this journey, you know, sitting in the mud hut talking to Ari's birth father. And Olivia is kicking her foot back and forth, digging a rut in the ground. And she didn't get it until I was like, this is their everything. This is where they live, sleep, eat, all of it. And she was like, it's like, yes, it is. So going back to one of the hardest things is that when, first of all, they decorated the house outside the door, they hung flowers and plants and it was beautiful. And we were like, that was done for us. Then also when we went to leave, Ari's birth father thanked us. And that was a really hard thing, right? This man has given up his child and now he's thanking us for taking his child. I still have a hard time when I think about that. You question a lot of things of life, but you know, my kids are really, they're happy kids. They're good. They're great kids. And we have open conversations. There's no, you know, we don't talk about that. We talk about it. Whatever you want to know, we talk about it. Cause I think it's so important that they truly understand where they're from, why these choices were made. And I hope they make the decision later to go back. They're still iffy on it. We've talked about it to go back and visit and see, but they're not ready yet.
Yeah. There were other siblings of Ari that were there wanting to leave as well.
Yeah. So we didn't really understand there was one of his older siblings. So he had five siblings and one of the boys, he was crying. And so we were asking the interpreter, is he crying because Ari's not coming back? I mean, that was my assumption, right? Again, never assume anything. The response was, no, he's crying because he wants to come with you as well. That was another moment where I was like, oh, this is really, really difficult on so many levels, so many layers to it.
Yeah. Could you have adopted one of Ari's siblings? Would they have allowed that?
No, I don't think so. Only if they chose to relinquish him. And I mean, there is a very strict process. And again, right now, I don't even think that there are many programs open anymore. It was a very, very strict process that the child has to be relinquished. And, you know, obviously, whoever is the family members are truly saying, not because, wait, my son says that he wants to go with you. That's not a reason. Right. It's really because they couldn't feed them all. I mean, you know, Ari had, he had rickets. He had, you know, that huge distended belly. He had ringworm all over his scalp. He has scars all over the bottom of his feet because he had never owned a pair of shoes before we met him. So, and you know, 4.5 years old. So it makes me more aware of the world and really, so much so. And my older kids as well. You know, this was eye-opening for them. And, you know, when we got home, sometimes they slip, but we stopped using the word starving when we're hungry, because I'm a big believer in that words matter. And the kids would say, I'm so starving. Can you make me something to eat? I was like, and after that trip, they no longer said, I'm starving. They'd be like, I'm kind of hungry.
Yeah.
Got a snack?
Yeah, really. That's such a simple thing, but it's profound.
Yeah.
So and now you have five children. That's not enough for you, Simone.
Well, you know, our car fit eight. So, you know, like might as well, you know, my husband and I and six. So we actually, when we were at the orphanage, we knew we were going to come back because there are just so many amazing kids just wanting to sit in your lap, just wanting to hold your hand. And it was, I mean, our girls too, they were like, they were crying when we left because they spent all of the time in the toddler rooms and the baby rooms holding the babies, and they didn't want to leave the babies behind. Now, all of these children, because they were at our agency's orphanage, they already had families that were waiting for them. So it wasn't like we're going to come back for this specific child. It was just right. that we knew we wanted to do it one more time.
That's, honestly, it's an incredible story. And I know there are many more stories to do with that in the book. During that period of time, when you're raising all these kids, you're not working. Please tell me you're not working too.
So I went back to school to be a teacher. There's a lot of things I've done. I was flipping houses. That's why I say it's okay to change your mind. I went back to school to be a teacher. So I was teaching. That was when the kids were in, well, a couple of them were still home actually, and then kindergarten and first grade. But it was very difficult because I had to have a full-time sitter to do that, because I don't like to do things halfway. So if I'm going to teach, I'm going to get there at 7:30 in the morning and make sure everything's ready for the day and stay late if a child needs help. And so I ended up spending more than I was making. And that we were like, okay, this is great, but let's rethink. I've always been doing something. I like to be busy. I like to, you know, I like the chaos inside the chaos.
Clearly. And then that's not enough. Then you decide to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. I mean,
that was out of my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Really? What was the incentive there? It was on your mind and you just wanted to do it. You wanted to conquer this.
Well, it was not on my mind. It was our friend had climbed it the year before, and he asked my husband, hey, they're putting together another team for next year. Would you be interested? And of course, the way I tell the story is 1, 2, 3. No, thank you. Call Simone. And they did. And I was like, you know, it's never been a bucket list item for me, but I do think I really want to do this. I have been struggling for so long to believe in myself. And I kind of think this is the moment that I need. And it was exactly the moment that I needed. And from the outside, people look in and say, oh, she's got the perfect life and she's the perfect mom. She's got 6 kids and she, you know, she gets it all done. And, you know, it can be really lonely, right? Like when people have these assumptions. I think it's so important that we talk about what our struggles are, because it took me until then to say, okay, so I made that decision to climb Kilimanjaro and I worked really hard. And my favorite was people would say to me, do you really think you're going to make it to the top? Oh no, I think I'm going to make it halfway. That's why I'm doing it.
right. I mean, but what are they going to say? So yes, I mean, obviously you trained, you don't just do this. You have to be serious about it. You train. It's not an easy task.
No,
it's not. Incredible. I'm sure there are a lot of people that try this and do not succeed in climbing to the summit. They do give up.
Yes, they do. You know, I was very fortunate because I was on a team of, you know, we were raising money and awareness for the Livestrong Foundation. And that just brought it to another level. When you add something philanthropic into a challenge for me, you don't want to stop. You don't want to give up. You really want to push through for the team. And everybody was, you know, we had people on the team. My tent mate is a breast cancer survivor. And watching her enthusiasm and her positivity every day, it's like, nah, you're not going to let any of those, you know, that voice inside my head, I wasn't going to let that creep in, because it was such a powerful experience to be surrounded by all of these people.
What did this finally ultimately teach you?
That I am really capable of whatever I want to do. First of all, I have to want it. So I think a lot of times we do things because we think they're expectations. If I want to accomplish something, first, I have to want it. And it's not just setting the goal, it's putting the work behind it. And that I shouldn't shy away from things that interest me because of fear of failure. If we are afraid to fail, we're never going to try anything. So, I mean, it taught me a lot of things, but really that was just believing in myself that I can do these things. I can write a book. I can, you know, I'm a good mom, like all of these things where you're like, okay, and being a mom makes a difference in the world. All of these things that we just sometimes don't think about it in that way. Maybe because society says it differently, or what we see on social media says it differently. But I think it's, for me, it was so important to say, I'm not going to pay attention to that anymore. What I'm going to focus on is doing my best in the world, to make my corner of the world better, and by believing in myself. And when I believe in myself, other people see that and they believe in themselves. So that's what I see with my children as well.
What a great role model for your children.
Thank you.
No, really, it's terrific. So then from this, then you went on to public speaking?
So I started doing a lot of volunteer work, and then I started speaking. And, you know, again, this that thought of, wait, do my stories impact people? And yeah, everybody's story, everybody has a story, first of all. Yeah, and when you share your story, you can change somebody's life. You really can, because they can see that piece of them that they hadn't seen before. And there's nothing more important, really, to, if you can help one person, if you can change one person's mind, then sharing even your most difficult times are completely worth it. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Did you have a wonderful website, SimoneCanego.com.
Thank you.
And you have terrific blog posts. And I would love to talk about one of them, if we could, the one where you talk about how to live your best life in 10 easy steps. They sound so simple, but most people do not do this. So I'd like to point out a few of them, and maybe okay. You can elaborate on them, because they're really important. You write, stop comparing yourself to others.
Mm. And that's a big one. And it was probably one of the biggest ones for me to really overcome, because I'm never going to be the bikini model. I'm just not. That is not how I was, even when I was younger. So, you know, my whole life I'm like, oh, I need to be thinner. I need to be this. People will like me more if I, you know, and part of it is every, you know, what's crazy is that every time I would lose weight, people would be like, you look so great. Wait, why is that the reason I look great? So it was really changing that mindset of it, but really understanding that you matter exactly how you are. You make a difference because of who you are. Nobody, you can't be anybody else. You can only be you. So really looking at it and saying, it doesn't matter what anybody else has. It doesn't matter how much money they have. It's look at yourself and see the good that you can do in the world, and stop looking at anybody else, especially on social media, because, you know, those moments, it makes me laugh. We had quick story. We like to do a family photo for the holidays. And one year, my oldest said, let's do ugly jackets. And the younger two were like, I don't want to do that. Okay, they went to Goodwill. They got some really ugly jackets. And the younger two did not like their jackets. And every single photo, they were like, had the most horrible face on. And I was like, guess what? This is our holiday card. This is real life, right? This isn't, you know, I didn't just, it made me laugh, because I was like, this is what we're posting.
And
because this
cares.
Is how it is. Yeah.
Yes. That's terrific. And you did bring up a huge point, social media. So detrimental to many. When you're a teenager, it's terrible, because they're always comparing themselves to Photoshopped images that are not real. And then as you get older, particularly for women, I have to say, it can also be a struggle. You know, if you're still in that mindset, not accepting who you are and your uniqueness, which is just such a wonderful message. Yeah, that's a really problematic one, the comparing yourself to others, not feeling good enough. Honestly, full disclosure, when I was researching you and reading your blog posts and listening to you speak and your book, I thought, oh my God, I'm not good enough.
Oh no.
I really did. I thought, wow. She's incredible. And it's very easy to fall into that.
Yeah. And that's why it's the conversation is that's what matters. That's where, you know, the not going from point A to point B with your head down, it's that part in between. And, you know, it's funny, when I was younger, I once had a friend, not a great friend, but a friend say to me, it's really hard to be your friend. You kind of make everyone else look bad because you're always doing so much stuff. And I was like,
well, that's so interesting.
I think that was one of the most hurtful things someone has ever said to me, because here I think that I'm like doing my best. And again, no idea what's happening in my life. She didn't ask those kinds of things. She just said, you know, you get it all done. Your husband is always happy. And I was like, oh, I think that really hurt. So I was like, okay, do I just not do things anymore? But no, that's not, the goal is to inspire other people, because you are, you know, it's with kindness. It's like, if you met me in person, I just want to be doing good things in the world. That's it. And to help other people.
And also, that comment was really coming from her issue. It wasn't about you. It generally is not about the person they're directing it at. Something that you learn with age.
Yes, for sure. And I say it to my kids all the time when someone's being mean to them at school or something's happening. I'm like, you know that it's not about you. It's about them. And maybe you can ask them if you can help them, because when they're being mean, it has, you know yourself. It's not about you.
Absolutely. Here's another one that you point out. Struggles are just a bump in the road.
I mean, we all struggle, and I think we don't talk about it enough, right? So that's one of the things is that, again, from the outside, if you look at my website, like I try to be real, but, you know, and that's like, I think like my blog posts are pretty real when I'm talking about things, but, you know, everybody has struggles. But if we hyper-focus on those struggles, if we don't just learn from them and move forward, if we stay in that moment, it's hard to do anything past then. You know, I've had a lot of bad moments in my life, and I could get stuck there, but I've chose not to. I tell the story in the book too, about my daughter when she was diagnosed with Crohn's, and she was a senior in high school, and it was devastating for her, right? I mean, you're now, you know, she had lost a lot of weight, and she was thinking, okay, I'm not even trying. This is pretty cool. And then she was like, wait, no, it's not. I'm really sick. And when she was given the diagnosis, you know, we said, you kind of have like, there's choices that you have to make here. You know, the rest of your life, you're going to have to make choices. The first choice is moving past just the diagnosis and understanding you have a choice to be miserable or you have a choice to be happy. And I said, give yourself time to be miserable and pick a day. And say, I'm going to be laying on the couch and crying and whatever you want to do for however many days. And then when you get to that day, you say, okay, today's the day I'm going to start moving forward. And because if I get stuck in that moment, I will feel sorry for myself my entire life instead of enjoying my life.
Do you know how important it is what you've just said? And you've just actually given a practical tool for a lot of people that do get stuck. That's terrific. Another one is that you've written down, remember, you're not alone.
Yeah, that's another one. I think, again, it goes back to that we don't like to talk about our struggles. And what I realized is as soon as I started talking about things, I realized that I was not alone in my struggles. You know, I always thought, oh, it's only me. It's only me that, look, everyone else looks so happy all the time and they look so fantastic in their clothes. And then you start a conversation with someone and you realize, wait, they've had an eating disorder for the last 10 years, or that they don't, you know, all of these different things that have crossed your mind, but you just haven't talked about them because you feel like you're going to look bad if you talk about these things. But everybody has these struggles. And when you talk about them with other people, you actually build this community where you have this group that you can then rely on. And it not only helps you, but it helps them as well.
Absolutely. Well said. Here's one. And this may refer to that friend of yours who made that comment. Let go of people who are keeping you stuck.
Yeah.
That's a difficult one.
That's a really difficult one. And, you know, there's always that I want to say there still is a sense of guilt for me with certain people that I had to say, okay, I can't. I'm 50 years old now. Like, I don't need drama in my life. That was when I was in middle school. It shouldn't have been as an adult, but when you look around, you see it in so many places with adults that there's some cattiness among women, or there's whatever. It's the competitive piece of that. Absolutely. You know, comparing yourself to others, and then you get stuck on these things, and then you don't know how to move forward.
So you release if you can, if you have the courage.
Yeah, and it is hard sometimes, but I can tell you that my friend group at this age is completely different than it was when I was in my 30s. So a lot of times when I was younger, we had friends because of our children, and it didn't always go the way we wanted it to go. And I, you know, both my husband and I were like, okay, this is stressful, that it's better not to have these people in our lives than to feel bad about things all the time, feel bad about ourselves all the time, because no matter what we did, we never felt like it was enough. Yeah. And so my closest friends are the people who I have a best friend from college who I see her maybe once a year, but when I see her, it's like we've never stopped seeing each other. So there's no like, oh, I can't believe you didn't do this, and I can't believe you didn't call me for this. It's like, it's so good to see you, and yeah, let's pick up where we left off.
One more, even though there are more in the blog, which I would encourage people to check out. Stop listening to naysayers and others. I would add to that, and yourself.
Yeah.
It's that voice in your head.
Yeah, you can't believe the voice inside your head. It's so true. It's, you know, I wouldn't have done so many of the things that I've done in my life if I did listen to other people that with their negative comments. You know, there's plenty of people who are willing to support you. And those are the people that you want to hold close, not just the, you know, just rambling about something, but someone that truly believes in you. Those are the people that you, that will support you, that they will tell you the truth when you need to hear it as well. That's also very important. I mean, I wouldn't have climbed Kilimanjaro, right? I mean, how many people needed to say to me, are you really going to make it to the top? It could have just said, you know what, they're right. I'm not an athlete. I'm not going to make it to the top, but I didn't go there. And you have to understand, again, a lot of times when people are saying things, it's because they haven't challenged themselves in a way, or they've always wanted to do something, but they've, you know, fear has held them back. So when they see someone else doing it, it's sometimes this, a bit of jealousy, like, why can't I do that? And my answer is, you can. You have to want to, but you can.
Exactly. You present to me as a person who lives in the moment, is present, and I don't know if it's always been like this, is accepting and not resisting what is happening at the present moment. Is that true? Am I seeing Simone?
I think now it is. I think when I was younger, I probably resisted a lot, just not understanding, trying to be someone I wasn't, right? Like not realizing, you know, it took me a long time to figure out my purpose and to figure out my passions and to not worry about what anybody else. So yes, I mean, now it's very much living in the moment, and it's very much about looking at other people and thinking, how do I want to come forward in the world? And, you know, how can I help them come forward as their best self as well? I was just on a flight actually, and there was an older gentleman sitting next to me. I don't know, he was probably in his late 80s. And so, but he was just the nicest man. So I was helping with the TV and putting his cane up and all these different things where, you know, these are not big deals. And the flight attendants obviously were very busy, so they didn't have time. He asked a couple of times because he didn't want to keep bothering me. I said, you're not bothering me. Like, right. I'm happy to help. We have a very long flight. I am happy with whatever you need. When we landed, right before we landed, he asked me if I could sign this piece of paper. And I said, do you want my phone number? He said, no, I just want you to write down your name because my daughter is picking me up at the airport and I want to tell her all about you. And that was one of the biggest compliments I think I've ever received in my life, right? Because it was these small little things, and it's the stuff I talk about all the time. The difference that you can make in someone's life just by being kind is, they're huge. So that was kind of a rambling story, but that was like, it to me, that was just such a moment for me that I was like, okay, this is living in the moment.
That's a wonderful story. And I think it directly relates to where you were flying from.
I went for, it was supposed to be 36 hours. It turned out to be more like 28 hours because my first flight had to be diverted. We had a passenger who was very sick, so we had to stop in Denver, which led to obviously a lot of flight delays later on. But it was the first time, I want to say, and this is not the story, but it was the first time that I have been on a flight where something like that happened and not one person complained. Oh, it wasn't, wow. People were like saying to the flight attendants, you know, I'm going to miss my flight. They're like, we hope the person is okay. We hope the person is okay. That was like, wow, okay, this is a, you know, this is humanity at its finest. But yeah, I was flying to Poland to go to the Ukrainian border. And I was going with the Jewish Federations of North America, bringing medical supplies and really bearing witness. I mean, really seeing what is happening with my own eyes so I can bring the stories back to help get even more support for the work that's being done there. And it was one of the hardest things that I think I've seen in my life. I've seen a lot, obviously, with adopting the children, and being at the border was, you know, watching people cross the border carrying, you know, their whole lives in their bags. I mean, you know, each one of them maybe had a small duffel bag and a backpack, and that was it. So it really made me think, okay, what would I do? What would I take? How, you know, I can't even imagine. So mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. And then we went to a refugee center, and that was the moment where it was very emotional for me, because that even more so, I couldn't imagine that you're just waiting. You don't know what's going to happen with the rest of your life, right? You don't know, is your husband okay? Is your son okay? And the refugee center was dogs, cats, you know, complete chaos. The lights stay on all of the time. You know, it's just people are sitting there. As you can imagine, it the look of desperation and, you know, what do I do next? But within, you know, the heartbreak is the bright light were the volunteers, seeing people who put their lives on hold and just came to a country they might not have had any connection with to help people that they don't even know, right? Because that's what they felt compelled to do. There were people outside that had driven from Switzerland with their van just to cook for people. So there's all these different people set outside the refugee center cooking different kinds of cuisine for the people that are inside. And, you know, doctors from Israel who are, you know, there volunteering their time to take care of everyone. And that was very powerful to see, again, what a difference one person can make in the world.
Yeah. Good or bad.
Good or bad. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's just unbelievable. This has been a powerful interview. I've really thoroughly enjoyed this. You know, you're so busy, you do so much, and for so many. How do you take care of yourself? What's a daily non-negotiable for Simone Kanego?
Morning affirmations. And that's something really? I learned just a few years ago, but it really makes a difference in my day. I am not a good sleeper. I have horrible insomnia. And there's a lot of days when I get up, I'm thinking, how am I going to do this today? And, you know, my kids call it mirror moments. I look in the mirror, I talk to myself, and they're like, here she goes again.
Wonderful.
But it really does, it makes a difference for me. And so I added to that after actually being on a podcast, evening gratitudes. So beyond, you know, looking at myself and saying, okay, this is what you're going to do today. This is what you're capable of. You know, believe in yourself, and but being thankful at the end of the day for something that happened, even when it's a horrible day, there is always something to be grateful for. That's how I see it.
Yeah, I actually totally agree. And it's a wonderful way to fall asleep. It's a wonderful way to end the day.
Yeah.
Because yes, even the littlest thing, you can look around and find something to be grateful for.
Absolutely.
Where can my audience find you?
Best is my website, simonekanego.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram. My husband always laughs. He's like, you're not a fan of social media, but you do it. I was like, it's part of the job. So I try to be real, try to show the things that are happening in my life and what matter to me. And so that's where you can find me.
Fantastic. And the book is Extraordinary Unordinary You. It's very important. Yes.
Because we're all unique. We are all unique. We are all unordinary, and we all make a difference in the world.
We are.
Yeah.
I agree. We are. We each are unique. I want to thank you so much for this interview. It's been joyful.
Yeah.
Truly.
I enjoyed it as well. Thank you so much.
Great. Thank you, Simone.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and share it with your friends. And join us next time for Lunch with a Healer. Share your thoughts with us. Your comments, questions, and suggestions are all welcome. Go to speakpipe.com/lunchwithahealer and record your message. Try it out today.